بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد فإن أحسن الكلام كلام الله وخير الهدى هدى محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وإن شر الأمور محدثاتها وكل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. So today is lesson number 7 in the section to do with Al-Qadr, which is the divine pre-decree or predestination, as they say in English. And this is lesson 42 overall in the book. So, in the previous lesson, we discussed a number of issues. These issues, so just to step back a little bit, we first of all established that Al-Qadr is Allah's prior knowledge of all things. And from that knowledge, there are other steps, which is everything to occur being written down. And then, at the point when a thing is decreed to happen, Allah Azza wa Jal, He wills it to happen, and then it comes to be by way of the material causes and effects with which Allah has created His creation. Right? So just to make sure that we start with Allah's ilm, Allah's knowledge, then this kitabah. These two are before the thing decreed. Then there is Allah's will and Allah's creative power. Right? So we discussed that at the beginning, the first few lessons. So on the basis of that, we then looked at the issue of the causes and their effects. Right? So the causes and their effects, meaning the way that Allah's creation, how it functions, how it operates, the material, the physical causes and their effects, and that we believe in the causes and their effects. We believe that things have properties, everything has a property, chemicals, minerals, substances, they all have particular properties. And on the one hand, we believe that the effects are caused by the properties, and on the other hand, we believe that Allah placed those properties in things and He is the ultimate cause. To Him belongs the ultimate power. And there's no conflict, there's no contradiction between saying, for example, that when you drink water, the water quenches your thirst because it has that property. Right? There's no conflict between that and between saying that this is by Allah's decree, this is by Allah's determination, right? This is by Allah's determination of things, because He put the property in the water. Just because we affirm this power or this property in the water doesn't mean that we've now stripped the attribute of power from Allah. There's no conflict between these two things, right? If we say the water has the power to quench your thirst, fire has the power to burn. When we say these things and we attribute power to these things, it doesn't mean that we've now divested Allah Azza wa Jal of His attribute of power. Because this is what some people do say that. They make a mistake and they say that. Like the Ash'aris, right? So that's on the one hand. And on the other hand, we are not like the materialists, the atheists, the naturalists, those who say that we can explain everything through the properties of things. Right? So since we know the mechanics and the mechanisms as to how things happen in creation, in biology, in chemistry, in physics, and we know the mechanics of all of that, we therefore do not need to explain, we don't need a creator. And this is false, because causes and their effects and the way that they've been tied together, there has to be one who who placed those causes and their effects. Just like a very simple example, an engine, the mechanics of an engine, how it functions, just because you know how the engine functions and you can explain how it's all working, does not mean that the engine wasn't the product of a creator or an engineer, right? Doesn't follow, just because you know the mechanics of how things are working. In the same way, just because you know the mechanics of how the creation functions, whether at the large scale or the small scale, does not mean it doesn't have a creator who gave everything its particular properties, right? So we established, therefore, after that, that things have properties. Allah put the properties in those things, right? And we neither, you know, we don't say that things only happen because of the properties of things, nor do we say, well, actually, no, we can't give things properties, because it would mean that we are attributing power to other than Allah, right? That's, both of these are incorrect. From this point, once we establish this point, and upon this, obviously, this means that we as Muslims, we are encouraged to study Allah's creation, to learn the properties of things, and to investigate and to exploit and use what we understand for the benefit of mankind, right? So this is, obviously, this is something that we're encouraged to do. So from this second point now, we are making a bridge to man, right? To man himself, and applying the same thing to man, right? So, for example, we have a rock. We say that the rock is made of a certain mineral and some metal, so it has the property of hardness, and Allah put the property in there. And so Allah put it in there, the rock has the property. When we throw the rock at the window, you know, it's the hardness of the rock and the momentum that caused the window to break, right? And Allah is the one who decreed all of that. But here we are speaking about something which is inanimate. It has no life. It has no choice. It has no will, right? So when we move from inanimate things, where the discussion is quite simple and straightforward, we are now going to move to, let's look at the human, right? So as humans, we can think, we can choose, we can speak, we can reflect, we can act, we can do all these things. So is there, you know, so the point being that the discussion is exactly the same, right? So just like we say that the rock and all its properties are from the will and decree of Allah, from the will and the creative power of Allah, when we come to man and we see man as one who can speak and think and reflect and choose to act, choose not to act, you know, all of his properties, they have been put in him and given to him by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, right? Which means it's exactly the same, that whenever a person wills to do something, that's only been possible through the will of Allah, right? Because Allah gave him the property of having a will. And whenever someone performs an action or does something, he is still under the creative power of Allah, because Allah is the one who gave him that power and that property. Just like Allah put the power of quenching thirst in water, the power to burn within fire, and so on and so forth. It's exactly the same discussion. There's no difference. So likewise, there is absolutely no contradiction between saying that a man cannot will and cannot do except as Allah wills and Allah creates for him to do, right? There's no contradiction between these two things. Just like there's no contradiction in saying that this rock and whatever its properties are cannot do except what Allah has put in the rock for it to be able to do. Do you understand? Right? So this is what we discussed in the previous lesson. And that was one of the issues that we raised, which is that a man having a will and having power, the ability to act, and then acting, being an agent who acts, this does not clash or contradict the qadr, meaning Allah's determination of all things, and not Allah's prior knowledge of all things. Like, there's no contradiction between these two things. There's no conflict. Because all of this is part and parcel of Al-Qadr. Right? So this is an important thing to grasp and understand. That was the issue, one of the issues that we looked at in the previous lesson. And then the second issue that we looked at was the issue of evil. Right? The issue of evil, good and evil. How can we explain evil within Allah's creation, and can evil be attributed? Can it be ascribed to Allah? So we discussed that issue in the previous lesson, and we made a distinction. We said we have to make a distinction between the thing that Allah decrees, this being an action of His, and then the thing decreed, which is, obviously the thing decreed in Arabic, it's al-qada and al-maqdi. So it's a very subtle distinction, and we gave like a number of examples to illustrate that. For example, if Allah created hunger, right, in Allah's action of creating hunger or death or disease or poverty, in His action of creating and decreeing, it's wisdom, and there is some good and benefit in it. Even though, from our point of view, when we experience these things, there is harm and evil for us, right? So, although there is evil in what is created, and evil arises within creation, in the action of Allah in creating that, His act is not evil, right? That's not an evil act. That's an act of wisdom, right? An act of wisdom and justice. And so the wisdoms in that would be, for example, that if we didn't have poverty, we would never know what is affluence. And if we didn't have death, we would not know what is life and appreciate. And if we didn't have disease, we would never appreciate what is good health and benefit good health, and so on and so forth, right? So we wouldn't know those meanings had we not had contrasting, things for us to grasp and understand. So in Allah's act of creating those things, there is wisdom and goodness. So evil is not attributed to Allah, even though within what Allah created, evil can arise and evil can occur, right? So He is the creator of good and of evil, but evil is not actually attributed to any of His actions, and nor in His act of decreeing, right? So we discussed that issue as well in the previous lesson. And this now brings us to the third issue then. So this is now we start getting into like the arguments to do with predestination, right? And where basically we come to the issue of free will, and can a person be held accountable, held responsible for his deeds? And is it right for a person to actually use Al-Qadr as an argument to justify his actions? Right, so today's lesson, this was a recap of what we've done previously. So today's lesson, lesson number 7, starts from this point. The Shaykh, rahimahullah, he says, فَإِنْ قَالَ قَائِلٌ, if a person was to say, أَفَلَا يَصِحُ عَلَى هَذَا التَّقْدِيرُ أَنْ يَحْتَجَّ بِالْقَدَرُ مَنْ خَالَفَ الشَّرْعُ. So the Shaykh says, now a question can arise. Someone could say that everything that's been explained up until this point, everything that we've discussed now, can a person not use the argument of Al-Qadr, the argument of predestination, and say, well, okay, if there is predestination, then can I not use that as an argument if I oppose the legislation? Meaning, if I oppose the commands and prohibitions of Allah. So if I drink, for example, if I fornicate, for example, if I steal, for example, if I murder, for example, well, that's Allah's decree. That's predestination. So am I not justified by way of the decree in opposing the legislation, right? So obviously this is like the big issue, and we're going to discuss the answer to this question through three lines of evidence. The first of all, the Quran, then the prophetic sunnah, the hadith, and then thirdly, arguments of reason and intellect. And then we will look at some kind of doubts and misconceptions that follow on from that, right? So that's what's going to be in today's lesson. So the Shaykh says, فالجواب, the answer to this is, أن الاحتجاج بالقدر على مخالفة الشرع لا يصح كما دل على ذلك الكتاب والسنة والنظر. He says, as for using predestination or the divine decree as an argument to justify opposition to the legislation, this is not correct, it's not valid. As has been indicated by the book of Allah, the Quran, by the Sunnah, the prophetic traditions, and another, which is observation or reason or intellect. So then he's going to go through each of the arguments, right? So as for the first, أَمَّا الْكِتَابِ So this is looking at the proof directly from the Qur'an. فَمِنْ أَدِلَّتِهِ قَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى From the evidences is the statement of Allah. سَيَقُولُ الَّذِينَ أَشْرَكُوا لَوْ شَاءَ اللَّهِ مَا أَشْرَكْنَا وَلَا آبَاؤُنَا وَلَا حَرَّمْنَا مِنْ شَيْءٍ So this is something that was actually said by the polytheists, the pagans. And their statement is mentioned in the Qur'an. Allah Azza wa Jalla, He says in this verse, the polytheists will say, that they are going to say, if Allah had so willed, we would not have committed polytheism. We would not have fallen into polytheism, if Allah had so willed. And nor would our forefathers, they wouldn't have done this either. And nor would we have made unlawful things. Things which meaning Allah had made lawful, and which we made unlawful, we wouldn't have done that either. So we would not have fallen into polytheism, nor would our forefathers, nor would we have made unlawful what is lawful, if Allah had willed for us not to do that. So basically they're using this as an argument to basically say, how can you say that our religion that we are upon, the polytheism, the paganism, the worship of idols, and likewise the laws and the rules that we have decided, you know, how can you say that's wrong if Allah Himself willed it to happen? So, in response, Allah Azza wa Jal, He rejected this answer, and He said, كَذَلِكَ كَذَّبَ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِهِمْ حَتَّى ذَاقُوا بَأْسَنَا Likewise was said by those who rejected before, those who came before them and rejected, you know, the messengers, until they tasted the punishment. Until they tasted the punishment. Right? So in this verse, what is the point of evidence in this verse? The point of evidence is that here, the way that Allah's prior knowledge and prior decree, the way it's being used, is not from the angle of submitting to Al-Qadr, of submitting and you know, showing submission to Allah's, what Allah has decreed. Rather, it's being used as an argument to justify opposition to His legislation. And the fact that this argument is not valid is shown by the fact that Allah Azza wa Jalla said straight after, كَذَلِكَ كَذَّبَ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِهِمْ حَتَّى ذَاقُوا بَأْسَنَا That this same thing was said by the people who came before, and they continued like this until they tasted the punishment. Right? So meaning that if this was an argument for you, then why did Allah punish you then? Right? So your argument is falsified, because your argument is, if our religion is wrong, If our religion is wrong, so this is the pagans of Mecca saying this. If our religion is wrong, we are worshipping idols, we are worshipping dead people in the graves, we are worshipping, you know, angels, we are worshipping the jinn, if this way is wrong, then why did Allah will for it to happen? How can you say our religion is wrong? Oh Muhammad, alayhi salatu wasalam, how can you say that to us, that our religion is false, when Allah is the one who decreed and willed for this to happen? So our religion cannot be wrong, it must be right. Right? So in response, the argument is that this thing that you are saying, this argument you are using, people before you used the same argument and they were made to taste Allah's punishment. So if your argument was correct, then why did those people get punished then? Why did the people of Pharaoh and the people of, you know, Noah, Nuh, and the people of Lot, the homosexuals, and why did they get punished then? Why did they get punished? If what you are saying is correct, right? So this is the Quranic argument against the pagans of Mecca to show that this is not a valid argument because of the simple fact that Allah punished nations for their polytheism, for their disbelief, for the rejection of the messengers. So this cannot be a correct argument. Okay. A second evidence from the Quran is the statement of Allah Azza wa Jal in Surah An-Nisa, the fourth chapter, verse 165. Allah Azza wa Jal, he speaks about the messengers. Rusulan, mubashirina wa munzirin, li'alla yakuna linnasi ala Allahi hujjatun ba'da rusul. So here Allah is speaking about the messengers. Right? He sent the messengers as those who give glad tidings. So they give glad tidings to the people that if you are righteous, then you will have Allah's forgiveness in paradise. And if you are evil, and if you are sinful and disobedient and whatever, then we warn you, we caution you against the punishment in this life and the next. So this is what the messengers do. They give glad tidings, they give the good news to the righteous people, and they warn the evildoers. So Allah is saying that He sent the messengers as those who give the good news and who give the warning, so that the people do not have any proof against Allah. So they have no argument with Allah after the sending of the messengers. After the sending of the messengers. So the Shaykh says, فَبَيَّنَ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى أَنَّ الْحُجَّةَ قَامَتْ عَلَى النَّاسِ بِإِرْسَالِ الرُّسُلِ وَلَا حُجَّةَ لَهُمْ عَلَى اللَّهِ بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ وَلَوْ كَانَ الْقَدَرُ حُجَّةً مَنْ تَفَتْ بِإِرْسَالِ الرُّسُلِ. So he says, so here in this verse it's become clear that Allah Azza wa Jal has established the proof against mankind by sending the messengers. And after that, after the messenger has been sent, now there is no argument. You can't use Al-Qadr, Allah's decree, as an argument now, because the messenger has been sent. And if using Al-Qadr was a valid excuse, then why would Allah say in this verse that mankind has no proof after the sending of the messenger, after the sending of the messengers? So this second verse, what is the point of argument here? The point of argument here is that Allah sent the prophets and messengers, they made clear the path, and Allah explicitly stated in the verse that He sent the messengers so that mankind would not have any excuse after the messengers were sent. So the messengers were sent and they said, this is the path of good, this is the path of righteousness, this is the path of paradise, and this is the path of evil, this is the path of corruption, this is the path towards hellfire. So they've conveyed that and made that clear to you now. Right? And once the messengers been sent and made that clear to you, now there is the excuse has been cut off. You can't now use any argument of pre-decree and, you know, it was determined for me and this, whatever, because the guidance has been basically conveyed to you. If it was a valid argument, then Allah would not say that in the Quran, لِأَلَّا يَكُونَ لِلنَّاسِ حُجَّةٌ بَعْدَ الرُّسُلِ. Allah would not say that, right? That so that there would be no proof left for mankind, after the sending of the messengers. Okay. Now, so these are two evidences from the Quran. Before we look at evidences from the Sunnah, there's just a couple of issues here that the Shaykh mentions, which is, if someone was to say, if we can also say to the sinful person who says, for example, well, look, it's decreed upon me that, I drink and I gamble and I do not perform my obligations. It's decreed upon me. And so we say to him, well, how did you come to this knowledge that Allah had decreed upon you? Like, how do you actually know that? How do you know what's in the decree of Allah? How did you come to know what's going to happen? And what, how do you actually know that this is from the decree of Allah? And, did Allah reveal this knowledge to you? How did you get this knowledge? Because remember, Al-Qadr is the knowledge of Allah of what is going to happen. And that knowledge has also been written down. So how did you, when you use the argument, oh well, it was written for me to, drink alcohol and to, whatever. How did you know that before doing it? How did you know that? There's no way for you to know that, right? And so if you do not have knowledge of that before it happens, before you do it, then how can you know something which is majhul, which is unknown to you, to be an actual argument for you? You can't do that, can you? You can't say, well, it's decreed for me, to drink alcohol tomorrow or to, miss my obligations tomorrow. It's decreed for me. And then you don't do it. But then you don't have the knowledge that that's actually been decreed upon you. So how is that now an argument? You can't really use that as an argument. And so in a like fashion, you could equally say, oh, tomorrow it's decreed for me to be a righteous person. You could have actually said that. You could have said, oh yeah, tomorrow it's actually decreed for me to refrain from alcohol and to be good to my parents and to give charity and to establish my obligations. That's what's decreed for me to tomorrow. Like, and then you would use that. So like, why did you use that argument? Why did you use this one, but not that one? Right, and what's the distinguish between what, that you should be saying this one and not that one? Like, so this is not an argument because you are just simply using what is unknown to you to justify your disobedience and your sin and the life that you want to live. So this is not really an argument. Then also on top of this, the Shaykh goes on to say that in fact, all of your other deeds, everything else you do, shows that this argument you are using is actually false, right? Because let's say, for example, you were setting out on a journey and you had a choice between two paths, right? So you could either go on this path where the journey is easy and simple, there's no danger, there's no fear for your property, for your life, if you take this like road, whatever. Or you take this road over here, and here there's a danger of being robbed and mugged and stabbed, and and it's not generally a pleasant route or whatever. You are never going to stop there and say, oh well, it was decreed for me. It's from the Qadr of Allah that I should take this path. The path of where I may get robbed and mugged and stabbed and whatever. So I'm just going to have to go. You do not think like this when it comes to your day-to-day activities, right? You make actual decisions and you think of the choices that you're going to make, and you never use Al-Qadr to relinquish that choice, and just to go along with whatever is bad for you. You don't do that, right? So therefore, when you now use the same argument to choose sins and disobedience, which are bad for you, it shows that your argument here is falsified by everything else you do in the rest of your life. It's a contradiction, right? So after that, the Shaykh then goes on to say that in the same way that this example can likewise be given with respect to the path. There's a path over here, the path of sin and disobedience, which will lead you to hellfire in the hereafter. And there's a path over here, path of righteousness, path of obedience, path of rectification, right? The path of prayer and charity and fasting and being good to the parents and good to the neighbor and, you know, and so on and so forth. You can choose this path and it will lead you to paradise, right? So what's the difference between the example of the journey, right? You know, you going through the path of which is dangerous, you might get mugged or robbed or whatever, or the path which is the path of safety. You do that in this life. So why are you then not applying the same thing to, you know, the two paths in relation to the hereafter? So anyhow, that's the verses from the Quran, and it's very clear. There is no argument. You can't use the divine pre-decree or predestination to justify your evil deeds. Secondly, we now have evidence from the Quran, the prophetic traditions. And so the Shaykh says, "Wa amma sunnah." As for the sunnah, from the evidences is what we find established in the two authentic compilations, the Sahihan of Al-Bukhari and Muslim, from Ali bin Abi Talib, who said that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said, "Ma minkum min ahadin illa waqad kutiba maq'aduhu min an-nar wa maq'aduhu min al-jannah." Okay, so the Prophet said to his companions, "There is not one of you except that his seat in hellfire has already been written, and his seat in paradise has already been written." Right? What this means is Allah has prior knowledge of the inhabitants of paradise and the inhabitants of hellfire. This is from his eternal knowledge. And Allah has that knowledge. Who is the inhabitant of hellfire? Who is the inhabitant of paradise? Then this knowledge has been written down. Right. Just because it's been written down does not mean that anyone has been forced to do the actions that will subsequently lead him to go to paradise or go to hellfire, right? So we'll look at that shortly. So anyhow, this is what the Prophet, he said this. And then the companions, when they heard this, they thought, okay, well, they said, "Qalu ya Rasulullah, afala nattakilu ala kitabina wa nada'u al-amal." So the companions said, "In that case, why can't we just rely upon what's been written and leave off action?" Like, if that's the case, that paradise has been written already, or hellfire has been written already, then what's the point of us acting? Should we just like abandon action? Should we just abandon the prayer and fasting and doing hajj, doing pilgrimage, and, you know, being good to the parent, good to the neighbor, giving charity, you know, doing remembrance, doing all the, should we just abandon all of that and rely only upon what has been written? So the Prophet, he said to them, "I'malu." He said, "Work deeds, do deeds. فَكُلٌّ مُيَسَّرٌ لِمَا خُلِقَ لَهُ." Because every person, it will be facilitated for him, it will be made easy for him, to do that for which he was created, to do what he was created for. As for the one who is from the people of happiness, meaning of paradise, then the deeds of the people of happiness will be facilitated for him. And as for the one who is from the people of wretchedness, meaning the people of hellfire, then the deeds of the people of hellfire will be facilitated for him. Right? Then the Messenger of Allah, he mentioned a passage from the Quran. And in this passage, which is in Surah Al-Layl, towards the end of the Quran, فَأَمَّا مَنْ أَعْطَى وَاتَّقَى وَصَدَّقَ بِالْحُسْنَى فَسَنُيَسِّرُهُ لِلْيُسْرَى وَأَمَّا مَنْ بَخِلَ وَاسْتَغْنَى وَكَذَّبَ بِالْحُسْنَى فَسَنُيَسِّرُهُ لِلْعُسْرَى. So Allah said, as for the one who gave in charity and who feared, meaning feared Allah, and he believed in, meaning paradise and the hereafter, then we shall make easy for him the path of easiness. We shall make it easy for him. And as for the one who was stingy, meaning he didn't give in charity, and he considered himself to be self-sufficient, and he disbelieved, meaning in the hereafter, paradise, and so on and so forth, then we shall make easy for him, we shall make easy for him, like the path of, like the difficulty, and, you know, difficult for him to do the righteous deeds. So, what do we take from this hadith, this tradition? So, the Shaykh goes on to explain that this is like, for example, if a person says, if Allah has decreed for me to have a son, if Allah has decreed for me to have a son, then what's the point in me getting married? Right, getting married to have relations in order to then have a child. Like the person who says this, like the person who says, if paradise has been written for me, then what's the point of me doing anything? Shall I not rely on the fact that paradise has been written for me? This would be the same as saying that if it has been decreed for me to have a son, to have a child, then what's the point of me getting married? Then it's going to happen anyway. Right? And nobody, the Shaykh says, this is not, you know, any person who says this, لَعُدَّ هَذَا الْقَوْلُ سَفَهًا فِي الْأَقَلِ, this statement would be considered to be like foolishness in intellect. In the same way, if a person says, well, I'm thirsty, or I'm starving, I'm hungry, if Allah has decreed for me, for my hunger to be removed, then it's going to happen anyway. What's the point of me having food? What's the point of me taking food? It's going to happen anyway. But this is stupidity, because we know that Allah has only, in His creation of the creation and His decree, He's decreed it to be such that if you are hungry, that hungry will go if you eat food. And if you want to have children, it's by having relations within marriage. In exactly the same way, just as, for example, if you are hungry and Allah has decreed, and it's in His prior knowledge, that your hunger will be removed at a specific point in time, and that's in Allah's knowledge, then that hunger being removed will only be because you will eat food. So you will eat food and your hunger will be gone, right? Because He took the means. In exactly the same way here, when the Messenger said that there's not one of you except your place in paradise or hellfire has already been written, that's because it's in Allah's prior knowledge, right? So a person will only get to paradise by doing the deeds of paradise. And a person will only enter hellfire by doing the deeds of hellfire. And so each person, it will be facilitated for him to do exactly that. Right? And that's based upon the person who seeks guidance and wants guidance. Allah will make it easy for him. Right? The one who believes in the hereafter, the one who seeks the hereafter, Allah will make it easy for him to do deeds of righteousness. And as for the one who doesn't believe in the hereafter and, you know, doesn't do the deeds, then it will be made hard for him to basically, you know, to enter into paradise. So the point being that this should now be very clear, because, you know, just because it is in Allah's knowledge that at some point you will be hungry and your hunger will be removed, Like, for example, you know, you will go to sleep tonight. In the morning, you will wake up and you will feel hungry, you will feel whatever, or thirsty even. Right? And so, that's in Allah's knowledge. That's going to happen. And it's written down as well. So you don't now say, well, okay, well, if it's written and whatever, then there's no point in me actually drinking any water in the morning or having any food, because my thirst or my hunger is going to go anyway. Now, if you were to think like this, you would be counted as the Shaykh says, it's an idiocy, it's just a foolishness in intellect. So in the same way, just because it is in Allah's knowledge that these people here are in paradise and these people there are in hellfire, it doesn't mean that you say, well, okay, if that's in Allah's knowledge and it's written down, then obviously there's no point in me praying and fasting and doing righteous deeds, because it's going to happen anyway. But no, it's not. Right? You only enter paradise through the ways and means which have been legislated for that to happen. And so what this means is that you don't rely upon the decree, al-qadr, that Allah has decreed things. Rather, you take the ways and the means. And the one who seeks the hereafter and paradise, Allah will make it easy for that person. Right? So that's why you see the believer who believes that he will be resurrected, he will be held to account, he will be rewarded, good with good, you know, evil with evil. Right? This person has the seeds of iman in his heart. Allah will now make it easy for this individual to do righteous deeds and to take the ways and means through which he will enter into paradise after Allah's mercy. On the other hand, you have a disbeliever who basically believes, you know, Darwinian evolution, there's no purpose to life, there's no hereafter, there's no resurrection, you know, there's no absolute right and wrong. And so, you know, I'll make my own philosophy and I'll decide what's right and wrong. And, you know, he just lives that life. Well, okay, that's what you've chosen. Allah will make it easy for you to, you know, to do the deeds that basically are going to eventually lead you into hellfire, because you've been written for hellfire. But at the same time, no one has forced you to do anything. You were given the opportunity to act. Right? You were given the opportunity to act, but you chose to act and to do things that would be the means for you entering into hellfire. Right? So the point being here is that where are we? Yeah. So this is an evidence from the prophetic sunnah that shows, no, you cannot use al-qadr as an argument. You can't say, if I'm decreed to be in paradise, I might as well just sit and do nothing, because then I will go to paradise anyway. You don't think like that. Right? So that hadith is a clear proof, because the messenger said, rather you should work, do deeds, because everything will be made easy for the person to whatever his destination is. Okay, so that's evidence from the sunnah, and there are other evidences as well. Now we come to arguments of reason. Right? Now we come to arguments of reason and intellect. And the first, so the Shaykh says, وَأَمَّا النَّظَرْ فَمِنْ أَدِلَّتِهِ, as for reason or intellect, from its arguments is, he says, أَنَّ تَارِكَ الْوَاجِبْ وفاعل المحرم يقدم على ذلك باختياره لا يشعر أن أحدا أكرهه عليه ولا يعلم أن ذلك مقدر لأن القدر سر مكتوم فلا يعلم أحد أن شيئا ما قدره الله تعالى إلا بعد وقوعه فكيف يصح أن يحتج بحجة لا يعلمها قبل إقدامه على ما اعتذر به بها عنه. So, and then he says, continues, ولماذا لم يقدر أن الله تعالى كتبه من أهل السعادة فيعمل بعملهم دون أن يقدر أن الله كتبه من أهل الشقاوة ويعمل بعملهم. So this first line of reasoning is actually what we mentioned earlier on. It's basically that, okay, the person who commits what is unlawful, or he avoids an obligation that he's supposed to do, he did this by his choice. And he knows that no one actually forced him to do anything. So if you took a cigarette, or if you sniffed some drugs, or if you drank some alcohol, or if you stole someone's, you know, car or something, you know full well that no one really forced you to do that. You did that from your own free will to do that. And you can't say, well, okay, I know that it was in Allah's decree for me to do that, that's why I did it, because you never... Who gave you that knowledge? Like, how did you know the secret of Allah? Because Al-Qadr is the sir maktum, it's like a hidden secret. No one knows what is from Al-Qadr until after it occurs. So how did you come to know this secret, you know, how did you come to know it? Because what Allah has decreed is only known after it occurs, that it was decreed to occur. So how are you then able to use that as an argument when you don't even know before you proceed to drinking the alcohol or doing whatever it is that you're doing, that this is what's been written upon you? How did you know that? You know, you didn't know that, so you can't use an excuse. And then likewise, why did you not think, okay, you know what, Allah has decreed for me to abandon drinking alcohol and to abandon stealing and to abandon, you know, my abandonment of obligations or whatever it might be. Why didn't you say that? And therefore you then do the righteous deeds of the people of happiness and paradise. And so therefore, you know, you thought like this rather than thinking, well, I'm from the people of hellfire and it's decreed upon me to do these sins, so what can I do? Why did you think that instead? Like, why did you think that instead of this? Right? So it shows that the argument is actually false. And so this first argument for reason is in connection to ilm, to knowledge. How did you know from Al-Qadr that this is what's decreed upon you before it actually occurred, such that you can now use it as an argument? Well, you can't. Because equally you could have said, oh, you know what, it's decreed upon me that I will be righteous and I will, you know, do the righteous deeds, I will abandon the evil deeds. Well, you could have equally as well have said that, because you are ignorant of what the actual decree of Allah is. So that's very clear. The second argument from Al-Qadr is that the Shaykh says, أَنَّ إِقْحَامَ النَّفْسِ فِي مَآثِمْ في مآثم ترك الواجب وفعل المحرم ظلم لها وعدوان عليها كما قال تعالى كما قال الله تعالى عن المكذبين للرسل وما ظلمناهم ولكن ظلموا أنفسهم ولو أن أحدا ظلم المحتج بالقدر على مخالفته ثم قال له ظلمي إياك كان بقدر الله لم يقبل منه هذه الحجة فكيف لا يقبل هذه الحجة بظلم غيره له ثم يحتج بها بظلمه هو لنفسه. Okay, this is a very good, powerful argument of reason against the person who tries to use predestination to claim he has no free will and that he's forced to do what he... You know, this is a very good argument. And the argument is that when you have an individual and he... thrusts himself into all sorts of unlawful things which are haram, unlawful. So he fornicates, he drinks, he gambles, he abandons his obligations, he does all of these different things. And what he's doing here is that he is oppressing his own soul. Right? This is, because when a person sins, he is committing oppression against himself. Right? A person can commit oppression against himself. Right, so this is dhulm of oneself. Just like, for example, Allah says in the Quran about the people of disbelief, we did not oppress them. وَمَا ظَلَمْنَاهُمْ We did not oppress them. وَلَكِنْ ظَلَمُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ But they wronged themselves. They brought ruin and wrong upon themselves. Right, so just think of this situation first. A sinful person is wronging himself. He's doing dhulm to himself. Okay, now, the person who uses Al-Qadr as an argument, meaning the one who says, oh, it's written upon me to drink and to take drugs and to steal and to have illicit relationships. It's written upon me to do that. You know, what can I do? It's, you know, it's in the decree of Allah. Now, if you were to come to this person and someone was to oppress this individual, so for example, you could go, if someone was using this argument, you could go to him and give him, you know, give him a backhand this way and punch him in the stomach and then drag him by the hair to his house, smash his door down, smash his windows, put acid on his car and do everything whatever possible. And you would say to him, you know what, this was by the decree of Allah. All of this was by the, you know, it was written for this to happen. And so you have no, you know, obviously I'm sure you're going to be happy that with the decree of Allah, just like you're happy with committing sins and, you know, but he would never accept this. He would never say, so, you know, if you have to give him a slap, he would say, oh, yes, the decree of Allah. And you punch him in the stomach, oh, yes, the decree of Allah. And you smash his door down, oh, yes. He's not going to make that argument, you know. He's not going to say that. And he would want justice, right? He would take action against you. He'd report it to the police. He'd, you know, get compensation, whatever it might do, whatever it might be. He would never, ever accept this argument if you were to actually oppress him, right? So the argument being, how can you use as an argument to justify your oppression of your own soul, while at the same time you would never accept someone else oppressing you? Like, so this is like a big contradiction, right? You'd actually demand justice, you know, if someone wronged you, robbed you, stole from you, destroyed your property, you know, kill someone in your family, you would demand justice. You would never say, oh, this is the decree of Allah, you know. You would never say that. And you know, this shows that this argument is foolish. And in fact, while we're on this topic, and I think I might have raised it previously as well, this is where we also look at the arguments of, like, the atheists as well, the atheists, the materialists. There was a clip of, that's his name, yeah. There's a kind of actor-comedian called Stephen Fry, right? You might have heard of him or whatever. I think that's his name, Stephen Fry. And there's an interview where he's being asked by somebody that if you were to meet God, so he's an atheist. If you were to meet God, what would you say to him? So he goes, well, what I would say to God would be cancer in children, you know, leukemia. Like, basically what he's trying to say is, like, how can you be a good God? And how can we see all this evil and harm and pain and suffering, you know, in disease in children? And that's his basic point, right? That this is what he would say. Now, obviously, this argument is an argument of emotion. This is an emotional argument, right? And it's a contradiction because this is actually an illegitimate thing for you to say, because in your mind, there actually is no creator to begin with, right? So there is no God, there is no creator, there is no being. It's a figment of the imagination. It's been made up by people, right? So if that is what is factual reality, then this argument and raising this argument and using this line of reasoning is not possible for an atheist. You can't come along and say, well, okay, well, there can't be a God because there's so much suffering, and, you know, how can be suffering alongside, you know, this is evil, this must be an evil God, this must be a, you know, angry God, this must be a... This line of thought is not legitimate for you to raise and to start speaking like this, because it's only one of two things. Either subconsciously, in your subconscious mind and in your psyche or in your fitrah, your natural disposition, there is an innate acknowledgement that there is a being behind this creation. And therefore, instinctively, you are trying to put the blame, right, as an emotional argument, right, upon this being. And you're doing it subconsciously. So really, deep down, you actually do believe in a creator or a being, right? Because instinctively, emotionally, and subconsciously, you are being led to put blame on a being, which means that there must be a being, right? It's either that, or you are mentally ill. You are mentally sick, because you are imagining, because in your mind, something doesn't exist and is a figment of the imagination, and there is no creator because there's only evolution. But yet, you want to pour anger and scorn and resentment against a being that doesn't actually exist. Right, so that means that this now is a mental issue. You need some help mentally. Instead, what you should be saying, what the atheist should be saying, is, well, since there's cosmic evolution, and then there's biological Darwinian evolution, and since that explains everything that comes to be, inclusive of everything like war and exploitation, and, for example, you know, when it comes to illness and disease, why is there disease? Well, it's because there are greedy capitalists, you know, who basically cut corners, and they make pollution, and they create synthetics, and they put it in our food. And, you know, because of malnutrition on the one hand and toxicity on the other hand, these diseases arise and whatever. All of this is like part and parcel of the cosmic, geological, then biological evolution. It's all Darwinian. So, you know, what we should be saying, well, cancer is just it's part of survival of the fittest, you know, and it's just Darwinian evolution, you know. That's what you should be saying. That's what your answer should be, as an atheist. You shouldn't be trying to put the blame on some what is to you an imaginary being that doesn't actually exist. So you can't be doing that, right? And likewise, if someone was to shoot you dead, that would just be, well, that's survival of the fittest. That's simple Darwinian evolution. I was dumb enough to be shot dead. You know, so obviously I don't deserve to survive, because obviously I wasn't smart enough to not be shot dead. Do you understand? So, like, there is no argument here along the lines of justice, because this is to do with justice, but also from the angle of evil as well. Like, the atheist would bring this from the angle of evil. How can there be evil if there's a God? You know, why is there leukemia? Why in children? Why are children being, you know, trafficked and killed, you know, and war and whatever? Well, that's just survival of the fittest, Darwinian evolution. That's all that is for you. For you, that's what that is. Why are you angry? What are you angry about? You know, like, what do you want to get angry against? Molecules, against, you know, like the oxygen atom, and the, you know, what do you want to be angry at? Because that's Darwinian evolution. Why are you trying to blame a God? So it doesn't make any sense. There's no rationality here for the atheist to use this type of argument. So that's really number two. Actually, I will stop at this point because we've gone over our time. So we'll take this up in the next lesson, inshallah ta'ala. We're going to look at one more, and then we're going to look at some kind of counter arguments that come along. But I think we'll stop there for today, inshallah ta'ala. We'll continue with that in the next lesson. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala nabina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in.